Hi there. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Some Other Sphere. If you enjoy it, please leave a rating on your preferred podcast platform or like and share it on social media, as it all really helps to promote the show. If you'd like to support the upkeep of the podcast as well, you can donate via Ko-fi. Go to ko-fi.com/someothersphere podcast to find out more. Thank you again, and now on to the episode. Hello, and welcome to Some Other Sphere, a podcast exploring our strange world, one conversation at a time. Hosted by Rick Palmer. My guest for this episode is Dr. Josh Bullock. Josh is a senior lecturer in the Criminology, Politics and Sociology Department of Kingston University, London, and part of the team behind Weekday Worldviews, a sociological project which is investigating the relationship between personal worldviews and psychological well-being amongst those attending public psychic events in the UK. It is the first project of its kind and offers a unique look at this grassroots phenomenon using mixed methods such as survey, observation, interview and comparison, which will allow the analysis of patterns of belief and their implication for understanding the relationship between science, spirituality and well-being. I begin the interview by talking with Josh a little about his background and the type of work he has done prior to Weekday Worldviews. We then discuss how he became involved with the project and the other people who are part of it, before moving on to talk about the methods used to gather the necessary data and what will happen once that process has been completed and the results analysed. I also talk with Josh about his perspective on the relationship between studying the paranormal and both its place and perception within academia. This interview was recorded in February 2024, so if you are listening at a later date, Weekday Worldviews may have concluded. However, our discussion is still very much worth a listen. Enjoy! Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Before we get on to discussing the Weekday Worldviews project, I just want to talk a little bit about your background. Your bio on the website mentions that your work is focused on the non-religious connection, belonging, and paranormal, superstitious, magical, and supernatural beliefs. That's quite a range of topics. How did you get interested in those sorts of things?
Yeah, it's. I do all kinds of, I guess, research into social science, but my main strand or background is in the sociology of religion, and my kind of expertise is within non-religion. So I was first interested in religion, I guess, when I was doing my master's. I was wondering about how and why really deeply religious people lose their faith. And at around the same time, I guess it was in 2013, there was a bit of a movement called the Sunday Assembly, which is still going on today. And that, so the Sunday Assembly are a non-religious congregation. Have you ever heard of them?
I haven't, no, actually.
No, so they're still relatively small, but they did get quite big around 2013, 2014. So I was interested in why and what happens to people once they lose their faith. And the Sunday Assembly popped up as a non-religious congregation. And at the time, it was called a church for atheists. So that was my PhD. I kind of focused on this non-religious congregation to explore the trends in what was happening in the UK with declining kind of church population and more people becoming non-religious. And then after that study, I was still interested in the kind of connection angle, which you mentioned about how and where non-religious people find a sense of connection. So we were fortunate to get a grant which allowed me to travel across Europe to speak to millennial young non-religious people. So I was fortunate to travel to Poland, Romania, Netherlands, Norway, Germany. and speak to them about their kind of non-religious beliefs and where they sort of sense of connection from. So that's kind of what I was doing prior to this topic. And my day job is I'm a senior lecturer in criminology and sociology at King's University, but that allows me quite a bit of research. So I'm fortunate to be able to do the kind of research when I'm not teaching.
Wow, yeah, that does sound really interesting. And so from those interactions, did you get a sense of how the paranormal fits? Is it somewhere between, it's not quite a belief, it's more of about connection and more of a connection with the world around you, with them?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And actually, I stumbled into this really because when we were seeking people to speak to across Europe, we were just asking them, you know, are they non-religious? And that was really the only prerequisite, and that they were of a certain age, they were millennial. So as part of the interviews which I would do with them, you know, I would ask them, tell me about what you believe in. And they would all start off by saying, you know, well, I'm non-religious. I don't believe in God. I'm not institutionally religious, as you might expect the interviews to go. But then as the conversations would flow, more than a third of my participants, so I interviewed around 70 people across 25 towns and cities in Europe, and around a third of them started telling me stories about paranormal beliefs. And there's a term called PSMS, which stands for paranormal, superstitious, magical, or supernatural beliefs. And more of a third of my interviewees expressed and told me stories about things like reincarnation, karma, fateful coincidences, meaningful coincidences. They were telling me and talking to me about life after death, magic, fortune telling, things to do with luck, things to do with carrying lucky charms. And this would stir up quite a bit of cognitive dissonance, which is when there's usually some kind of discomfort in how like a person is feeling, when their behavior does not align with the values and beliefs. So they would tell me that they're non-religious, and then they would tell me about a story about how like books flew off their wall, or you know, they've got a strange affinity with numbers, or they carry something with them every day because they think it's going to bring them wealth. And so it was actually a kind of stumbling into this because I didn't expect to find that, I guess, because these were quite staunchly non-religious people. And, you know, when a third of the sample, which is quite sizable, you can still say two thirds of them didn't express these beliefs, but a third of them did. So it was really interesting to speak to people when you know, you might think that they are an atheist, or you know, they don't believe in anything. But in fact, a lot of these people across Europe were telling me all kinds of stories about the paranormal.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is accurate, but from my own understanding, it feels like a lot of the subjects, a lot of things that would get considered paranormal, are areas which have been pushed to the outer edges of our culture, sort of what is sort of acceptable, polite conversation. And do you think that that is the case? And does it make it more difficult from a sociological point of view to understand people's relationship with these sorts of subjects?
Yeah, I guess so. I think for some, these kind of topics might be like slightly taboo, particularly if you've come from a Christian background, or you know, you might not want to talk about the paranormal in ways that aren't like Judeo-Christian. But also, sometimes when you just tell another person a story, that's probably had like quite a profound experience, or might have changed the way you think about something. There's certainly like a bit of a opening up there. So it's I think when people discuss these stories, that there's certainly a bit of vulnerability there, which is actually one of the things what we're trying to do with this project is to, which we can talk about perhaps in a little bit, but to open up these kind of discussions a bit more, because they are part of human experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, let's get on to the Weekday Worldviews project.
Yes.
How did that come about?
So the idea came around after I was talking with one of my colleagues on the project, who's called Dr. Caroline Starkey, and she's based at the University of Leeds. And I received a message from her, and I checked earlier today, actually, and it was February 2020, so it's 4 years ago. And the message starts something like, "Hello, love, random question, but have you ever been to a pub psychic night? Because there seems to be loads of pub psychic nights where I live, and Caroline lives in Leeds, and she tells me that her mates go all the time. She thinks it's a big northern working class thing, but there's definitely something super weird going on around the relationship of religion and spirituality. And has anyone written about it before? And I did a little bit of research, and it turns out that there's been very little to no kind of research on pub psychic nights. And typically the research that has been done focuses on psychics themselves. And a lot of it's about trying to prove or disprove psychic phenomenon, which has meant that that the psychic community has been quite rightly wary of research. Or sometimes there's research on spiritualist churches, but it's not the type of, but not research on the type of events that happen in your local kind of social club. And at the same time, I was doing the research, which was seeing me travel around Europe, which I just discussed. And one of the key findings was, even though traditional religion is on the decline, more and more people say that they're non-religious in the UK when they're asked in surveys and censuses. Even to the point now, actually, that recently, within the last like 5 years or so, some surveys have it that there's more non-religious people in the UK than religious. But the research we were doing on connection was important here, because we were finding that there's a kind of general need that the universe, well, people wanted a general need that they felt that the universe was caring for them. And it fits in the kind of concept of, you know, when people throw things out to the universe. Because even though science is explaining a lot, or it can explain a lot, why something has happened, it doesn't provide kind of any individual meaning, or I guess that everything's going to be okay. So my friend was telling me about these events in and around the Leeds area, and she told me that they're usually in working men's clubs or pubs. She thinks that they're predominantly working class, predominantly ethnically white British. She was telling me that there's more females than males, that there's something intergenerationally happening, because it's usually like mothers and daughters. And I was, where I live in London, there's a pub literally maybe a stone's throw away. And then there's a big yellow billboard outside this pub. And it's a good working class pub, probably the best pub in the area. But this billboard throughout the year hosts psychics, and it will tell you about the next psychic night happening. And they're often ticketed, you know, involving food. And I did some research and found out that, you know, these things seem to be growing. So we put our heads together and thought about how we could create this into a research project.
Right, yeah. Just going back to when people are talking to you about, and in general, the people's becoming less religious. When you notice trends like that, does it correlate with a lack of trust in sort of institutions and times in the world when there seems to be more trouble? I mean, I know for the last decade or so, there seems to be something going on all the time. And I know that there seemed to be an increase in spiritualism after the American Civil War and after the First World War. Is that something that you've picked up on, and does it represent a reaction to large social trends?
Yeah, it's a really good question. We currently don't know, but we're hoping to find this out, because, like you said, like spiritualism usually peaks during times of like mass societal upheaval or crisis, like civil wars, world wars, pandemics. And we don't really know where the pandemic fits into all of this, because obviously we saw huge loss of life. But importantly, it was about how people were processing that loss of life. So I don't know, like during the pandemic, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, and maybe yourself, would have attended like a funeral on Zoom or the equivalent. So not being able to see the family, not being able to kind of process the grief or the death of loved ones might have something to do with the rise in popularity, because particularly if we know as society we're moving towards more non-religious in terms of, like you said, institutionally religious, you know, where do people go to process these kind of feelings? And that's something we're trying to trying to explore that if this is these rises in the alternative spiritual places are helping people to deal with grief.
Yeah, I'm interested in whether it's that people are more comfortable doing these sorts of things rather than, so it's maybe it's something that they've always been interested in, but in times of crisis or at times when, yeah, like at times we've been discussing, they just feel more comfortable engaging in it more publicly or talking about it more rather than picking up an interest in it at these times.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something interested in the space of these events, because people might not want to go for a one-to-one reading, but if they can go with their friends and they're going to somewhere familiar, like, you know, in their local area, like a pub that they've been to before, it might, and I don't know yet because we haven't quite got there in terms of the research, but they might feel more open in terms of like going to these events together rather than alone.
Yeah, absolutely. So once you had the idea for the project, how did you work out how to put it together and understand how it would work?
Yeah, so we brought in another one of our colleagues on the project called Dr. Adam Powell, and he's at Durham. And he's got some expertise in this area because he'd previously done a survey on mediums and on research on voice hearing. So we submitted a grant to a network at Birmingham called the International Research Network for the Study of Science and Belief in Society. And they liked our project, but they didn't like it enough right away to fund it. So we had to do it again and reword it, change it slightly. So we did get the funding in 2023. So it's the first sociological investigation that we know of. I'd love it if we were wrong and if somebody else has done something similar, because then we could compare. But we think we're the first sociological investigation to explore the relationship between people's worldviews and their beliefs and their well-being among these public psychic events in the UK. And we've also got a PhD student, Bethan Oak, working on the project. And together, I think it's important to say we have a varied views in terms of religion, the occult and the paranormal. So myself, I'm skeptical, but open. One of my colleagues is very open and would, I guess, deem themselves a believer. And then we've got an in-betweener, and we've also got a cultist. So we've got a wide range of personal beliefs, which is important. But how does it work, what we're doing? So the project lasts for a year, but I'm sure we'll continue afterwards. And we've got three strands to the research. So unlike previous research on psychics and mediums themselves, we're excluding these groups of people. We're only interested in the audience and not the mediums themselves. So if somebody's a working medium, unfortunately, we don't want to speak to you for this project. But we're also trying to speak to people who have been recently to a psychic event within the last 18 months, because we want the experience to be as fresh as possible. So, you might have gone 10, 20 years ago. And while that's interesting, we want the kind of recent experience to still be fresh. So what does it look like? It's three strands to it. We're doing a survey. We're interviewing people. And we are also going to the events. So we're doing the observations. That's the kind of the three things that we're doing, like a mixed method project to try to understand what's going on.
Right, yeah. So what has the observation part of the project been like? Have you been to many events?
Well, I haven't been to one yet, but it is on my horizon to do in March 2024. But we are exploring different areas. So because I'm based in London, I'm going to be exploring a couple of different psychic nights. My colleague who's in Yorkshire in Leeds will be going to a couple there, and she has been, and we're also going to be going to a few in the northeast of England to see if there's any differences in location. But my colleague has been to a couple already, which have been quite interesting also, I'm told. But that's the observation part, and the idea with that is we're not focusing on the psychics themselves, we're looking at the audience, we're trying to speak to people who are there, trying to gauge why they're going and what they're getting out of it.
Yeah, and for people that have been to one of these events and are submitting the survey, I've had a look through the survey. It's very thorough. I'm guessing they can give information about how the event worked, what the medium did. Can they talk about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, we want to know if you got a reading, what that was like, how did it make you feel? But also then, you know, what did you do after the event? Because these events typically take place in a weekday. You know, did it have any kind of profound changes to how you were living your life? Did you kind of take away that moment? Do you think about it? So, yeah, so we're not kind of focusing on the medium in terms of we're not researching them, but we certainly want to know about the interactions that people experienced.
Excellent. And yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the survey. Like I was saying, it's very thorough, and it's, yeah, just talk us through that if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. So the survey is live now, and it will shut around April, May 2024. And we'd love for everybody to take it. Like I said, the only things, the excluding things, is that you have to be over the age of 18, you have to live in the UK, and you can't identify as a practicing medium or psychic. So the first things that we're interested in is who you are as a person. So the demographic questions. So there's questions in there regarding your religion or non-religious belief, but also your social class, gender, and ethnicity, because our initial kind of observations are interesting, and we need to kind of dig a little bit deeper. But we think that there's something happening in kind of white working class areas, and we think that it's predominantly females attending. We might be wrong. That's our kind of hypothesis, or what we think is happening. So there's some questions around that, and then we've got questions around science. So some questions might ask things like, science provides you with a better understanding of the universe than religion does, or we can only believe in what science has proven. And all of these questions are on a Likert scale. So they will ask you what you think about these statements from strongly disagree to strongly agree. So there's no right or wrong answers. And then we move on to probably our most, I guess, hotly contested part of the survey, which is called the Paranormal Belief Scale. And it's not a scale that we have created. We are using it because it's validated. And all that means is it's been tested to ensure that the questions measure the thing that it's intending to measure. So there's some questions in there about religious belief, about, you know, if you believe in witchcraft, how superstitious you are, spiritualism, extraordinary forms of life, and precognition. So it'll ask you questions ranging from the abominable snowman of Tibet exists to I believe in aliens, ghosts, or black magic is possible, or astral projection is possible. So all of those things are on a scale. And then we have some other questions asking participants what they think about death. And then finally about what their experience was like attending a psychic night, and you know, if they'd plan to go back. And also what are the kind of spiritual practices they might do, because, you know, psychic nights might be one thing, but they might also engage in kind of one-to-one tarots, horoscopes. So there might be other spiritual practices they engage with. So it is quite thorough. It takes about 5 to 10 minutes on average to complete. But we're trying to get a full range of people to complete it just on the basis that they've been to a psychic night recently.
I have to admit, the abominable snowman question was probably one of my favorites, I think, in the survey. In regards to the questions it asks, if someone's interested in filling it out, but they perhaps come from their opinion on, for example, the abominable snowman or paranormal phenomena, not from a position of they would say they believe in it, but they personally think they know it exists, how should they fill out the survey? Because when I was going through the questions, I mean, I completely understand why the questions are phrased the way they are. But from my point of view, it's not so much I believe in something. It's more that on a personal level, I think I I know it exists, but I perhaps don't know quite what it is. So I don't feel like I have the answers, but I know that there's something there.
Tell me more, Rick. This sounds interesting.
I think it's something I've come to realize probably through doing the podcast, actually, is that a good example of this is Uncanny. I like that podcast, yes. That TV show. I think it's great. But I'm not a huge fan of the team believer, team skeptic dichotomy. I don't think it's particularly helpful. That's just my opinion. Because I think ghosts exist, for example, but I don't know what they are. So I think, and this isn't related to the survey, just for me, I think a better question than do you believe in ghosts is what do you think a ghost is? Because I feel like it perhaps engages more people and doesn't polarize opinion. So that's just going through the survey. I feel like I'm not criticizing the survey, please.
No. I mean,
for people who might have a similar attitude or understanding of paranormal phenomena, how would you advise them completing this survey? Because I'm sure they'd like to. It just might be like myself. They might be a bit unsure how to go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting point. And yeah, but the believer and unbeliever kind of dichotomy or team skeptic, team believer isn't particularly helpful. You're right. I mean, my previous research on just religion and non-religion puts things on a spectrum, right? So it's not polarizing kind of groups. There's a lot of kind of beliefs that people have that coexist together quite harmoniously. If they don't know what to choose, there is an uncertain box, right? So you don't have to kind of strongly agree or strongly disagree or slightly moderately agree or disagree. There is uncertain, but this is one thing, or I guess one problem with surveys in general, is that they're not capturing. I mean, like sociologists love to talk about nuance, but they're not capturing the kind of like insights. And that's why we're also doing interviews, so that we can have these kind of discussions with people. We can dig a little bit deeper about any kind of things that they found hard to answer or what they believe in.
Right, yeah. And I know another aspect of the study is comparison.
Yes.
How does that work?
We're trying to compare things, firstly, in terms of location. We're interested in, like I said earlier, whether this is a kind of working class phenomenon, whether this is like a certain space that this is happening, or if it's just happening across all of England. And one thing that we noticed straight away is when we're talking to some of our European colleagues, we had to kind of repeat what we're doing several times, and lots of our European colleagues found it quite funny because they'd never heard of this happening. Like, they wouldn't certainly have a psychic event in a pub. So trying to find out if this is different in different places across the UK is one comparison. The reason why we have these different demographic questions as well at the start is we're interested in finding out if there's any differences in things like gender or ethnicity, or whether your religious background or religious belief has any kind of impact on what you believe. So we're still in the process of doing the survey, and we haven't even started analysing the results, but I'm staring at some of them right now, Rick. I don't know if you want me to go through some of them very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done this in any real detail. And importantly, we've got about 100 people or so who've filled it out so far. So if another 100 people do it, and which we really hope they will, these results might change. But interestingly, I'll just go through some of them. And maybe you can comment and tell me what you think if any of them stand out. But more males than females think that science provides us with a better understanding of the universe than religion does. So that there's perhaps a gender aspect there to do with science being the most efficient means of attaining the truth. But more females believe that the soul continues to exist, even the body may die. And I don't know what's going on there just yet. More females strongly agree that black magic really exists. More females also believe that astral projection strongly exists. The level of the abominable snowman of Tibet existing is about the same, right? But more females are uncertain on this one. But also more females strongly agree that it does exist. So that's an interesting one. More females, even though more males in this are likely to be religious, more females think that there's strongly agree with the statement there is a devil. So already we're seeing some kind of gender differences in how people are responding to these beliefs. And I haven't even got round to looking at the experience of these events yet. So just being able to capture, and as far as we know, this hasn't been done before. Like, nobody knows about the audience of these events. So nobody's even capturing the kind of people who go to them. You know, we don't know for sure what the ages are, what the relationships are with the other people who go, if people go alone, if they go with their friends, if they go with their partners. So kind of having all of this information about who these people are who are attending lends us to be able to kind of compare experiences.
Yeah, it as I understand it, interest in the paranormal and the ability to discuss it perhaps might be more prevalent historically in women than men, because it's perhaps a space where they were allowed to do that. There was less control over the time that they had to engage in those sorts of interests. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and also, you know, typically women are more likely to be religious than men. So there's something to do with religion, paranormal, and gender. But then there's also other things going on here, like, you know, I don't know how far has been explored in terms of these audiences, but just looking at one of the questions, which is the number 13 is unlucky. But more males are likely to agree with this statement than females. Why? I don't know yet. But there's definitely some areas of comparison to be had.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if it might be to do with sports teams, maybe? I'm not sure. That's just a random guess, but...
No.
Superstition is an interesting one, though. I mean, I guess I am slightly superstitious. I don't like walking under ladders, for example. I won't. and that's that's something that your work has focused on previously. Do superstitions tend to follow cultural differences the same way that some of the areas we're talking about tonight do?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think a lot of these things exist as stories, right? They've been like passed down, like you shouldn't do this because it will result in this outcome. So they're kind of embedded into our like early socialization, and then they're stories that we tell each other and tell other people. And of course they change on culture, like different cultures have different superstitions and different stories they tell. Sometimes there are differences between gender as well. But yeah, superstition is a really interesting one, because often, you know, I'd ask people if they're superstitious and they would say no, but then they would tell me something like later on that black cats bring them bad luck. And then I'd say, oh, but you said, you know, you weren't superstitious. And they say, well, I'm not. And then, you know, this is where the cognitive dissonance would come in. And it was me, basically. Having me ask them the questions, I was the problem. Because prior to that, you know, their beliefs existed in harmony. It was only when I, the kind of annoying researcher, would tell, you know, ask them to explain a little bit more about why they think black cats bring them bad luck, but they don't really believe it, but they do believe it. Yeah, I was the kind of the crowbar, like trying to, you know, understand the experience. But if it wasn't for me, you know, these beliefs just coexist quite harmoniously with other religious, spiritual, non-religious worldviews. Yeah, it's only when people have to explain it out loud, I think, is when they start trying to think about the thought processes, about why they do believe these things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about cognitive dissonance with superstitions, because, like I say, I don't want to walk under a ladder, but a black cat is fine. Yeah. Like that doesn't bother me at all. For a long time, when I was at a traffic crossing and it beeped, like I had to get across the road before the beeps ended, it was like a little ritual I had to do. For the life of me, I don't know why. Luckily, I don't think I do that anymore. I think less traffic crossings beep. But yeah.
I was going to say, people have these rituals which help them, you know, just live, I guess, and get through each day to the next. But, you know, if somebody like me, I was being like super annoying and I was like, you know, Rick, why did you do that? But you didn't believe that. That's where the kind of cognitive dissonance might start popping up, because you'd have to kind of question, challenge your own beliefs, which is something we don't typically do on a day-to-day basis. We're too busy living.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you don't have the findings yet, but once the surveys and all the information taking has come to a conclusion, what happens next with this?
There's a few things. So one of the core kind of, I guess, principles of our research group is that we want the research to be seen. We want the research to be read, to be criticized, to be, you know, whatever it might be. And one of the things we've already done so far is we've hosted an event in Leeds. I think it was Leeds' oldest pub, called the Pack Horse. And we called it Spirited Conversations. You can have some quite good names with this kind of research. But we want to speak to the kind of general public more. One of the things that we did actually do at that event is a little bit like uncanny, is we asked people to, if they felt comfortable to share some kind of stories, because we wanted to kind of open up these safe spaces for people to talk about these perhaps like really profound life experiences. I myself haven't had anything paranormal. I haven't witnessed anything. And sometimes I often wish I had. And then I do think about what kind of, you know, how that might impact my life, you know? But just being able to allow a space for other people to talk about it is something that we're hoping to do. With academic research, it can take quite a while for the findings to actually be published. But we're aiming to publish them in journal articles, because within journal articles that they'll get to print a lot quicker than a book would. So we're hoping to publish some open access journal articles, meaning that everybody could read them. They'll be available, you know, on the internet and also on our project website, which is called weekdayworldviews.com, which is where you can find the survey and how to take part. So that's one of the things that we're doing. We're also going to go to some conferences and to speak about what we found. We're hosting an online conference called The Consilience in the Study of Tandem Realities, which is about bringing together lots of different researchers from lots of different disciplines to talk about this in more detail. Because one of the goals, I guess, is after we finish, is we're hoping that it sparks more research into the paranormal, more research into the kind of supernatural, magical views of people, so that this research can continue. So we see the project as not like an end goal, but hopefully the start, so other people can build upon it and see what we found.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this does seem like something that could have, you know, you could do it again and sort of measure results and measure your findings over a longer period of time. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah, we would have loved to, if possible, done this on like a longitudinal scale, meaning that we could have followed somebody or a group of people. Because the reason why we're not asking for people who've been to psychic nights, you know, 10, 20 years ago, is because we want it to be fresh in the memory. But we would love to, you know, I guess, follow a group of people who haven't been before, perhaps, about how they were feeling before the event, how they felt during the event, and then what it means to them afterwards, whether they just carry on their lives, you know, they don't give it any thought or thinking about it. But, you know, if you are going to get a reading of a medium or psychic and they do say something that resonates with you, it could have a really profound impact on you, you know, how you live your life. And we don't know what impact that is yet. And we're hoping to capture it a little bit in the survey and the interviews that we're doing. But being able to follow, you know, this as a trend, would be really interesting. And just like other research, you kind of think, well, why hasn't anybody done this before? But maybe like now's the right time, if that makes sense. Like maybe this research wouldn't have been important 30 years ago, but there's something about, you know, post-pandemic, the 21st century, the the rise in popularity of these events, you know, it might be that now is the right time to start these kind of conversations. And you know, the like you said, your podcast, also others in the area, are also doing good work in terms of sparking these conversations as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think this project has real potential, especially if someone could perhaps do the survey over an extended period of time, and you get to see how their answers might change over that period. Because I know from my own experience, I mean, I've been interested in the paranormal most of my life, and for a long time it really was just that. It was just an interest in ghosts and UFOs and cryptids and all that sort of stuff. But more recently, and I suppose doing the podcast has helped, I've really come to see it as having an interest in these things is my way to try and understand the world around me and enjoy the mystery as well, I think. Now, I'm not an academic. I'm not a scientist. I probably wouldn't be able to sort of really understand the literal makeup of the universe, but through an interest in the paranormal, it can take you into areas like philosophy and psychology and ancient history and all these sorts of things where weirdness does exist. And I found that to be really helpful for me on a personal level.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, weirdness does exist, but it also has very real kind of meaning in people's lives, right? And it helps them to understand the world that they live in. And in some ways, I think, acts perhaps like traditional religion might do in terms of helps people to be less anxious about the world that they live in. You know, that they can search for meaning outside of science, outside of religion, in the kind of weirdness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess they can feel like they have a bit more agency in how they interact with the world, rather than getting a message from an outside authority.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you know, all the big questions that ever were still are, right? Like the who are we? How did we get here? What happens next? All of those questions will always remain. And, you know, depending on your worldview or religious, non-religious world stance, you know, some religions will answer these questions. But if you're non-religious, which is where my research fits into this, like what do you do, you know, to find comfort is something that I've always been interested in. You know, how do you live kind of day to day? What kind of things do you search for? Where do you find a sense of connection in the world that you live in? There's things that I'm personally interested in. I was going to ask Rick, have you ever been to one of these psychic nights that I'm talking about?
You know what? I haven't, but I really want to, so I can fill out the survey. But yeah, it's something I've wanted to go to. There's a spiritualist church, not in Grantham where I live, but in Sleaford, which isn't too far away. So I thought about going there, but I just haven't got around to it yet.
Yeah, spiritualist churches are interesting because there has been a little bit of research on this. And some of the people that we spoke to have felt a bit excluded because they think that we should be looking at spiritualist churches as one of our kind of field, like our sites and locations. Because a lot of the mediumship, I guess, which happens, the talking to the dead, are within these spaces. But we're really interested in the, I don't know what percentage it would be, but it's a lot smaller, right? The kind of more localized spaces, these pop-up events that happen outside of these institutions is, I think, like very fascinating. Why they're happening in these civic, secular buildings, these pubs, you know, these pop-up events almost. But yeah, a spiritualist, like my colleague Caroline has been to a spiritualist church as part of this project, so we are looking at it in a little bit, but we're more interested in the kind of the weekday worldviews, the weekday events that happen in these working men's clubs and these pubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I might just have to get myself up to Leeds. It sounds great. I've been to Leeds before, but never to one of these events, so I think I'll have to just do that.
Yeah, I've been to Leeds as part of the project, but from what my colleague tells me, it's a bit of a spiritualist kind of hub. There's lots of tarot shops, you know, one-to-one reading shops as well within Leeds. So and typically in the more kind of working class areas as well. So there's definitely a space kind of location, locality aspect going on to, you know, if I don't know if you've ever been to Glastonbury, but those kind of shops exist, you know, in different working class hubs of the UK.
Yeah, yeah. There's a shop like that in Grantham where I live. And and I have to admit, I didn't know that there was sort of a community of people who were interested in that sort of thing in Grantham, but there are, there's, you know, a lot of people who are, so it's good to know that there are these people who around and are interested in this sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So something I did want to ask you is that the relationship between the paranormal and Fortean subjects and academia is, I get the impression that it's not always been a friendly relationship. There's, and people in academia who are interested in these sorts of subjects in certain places might have to be a little careful in terms of the research they do. I'm guessing with sociology, that might be an area, especially the work and the research that you're doing, that's the perfect place for it.
Yeah, I think it's a really good fit. There's been a strained relationship, I'd say, is that at best between academia and the paranormal. I mean, we've actually found it quite difficult to find people to take part in our survey and also to be interviewed. So the other thing, the other strand I didn't really talk about a lot was we're trying to find 20 people to speak to better understand the survey results, to kind of dig deeper. And actually, it's been really difficult because people who are part of these paranormal psychic communities, medium communities, whatever they might be, are probably rightfully quite wary of academic research coming in and analyzing and poking and prodding. And that's not what we're doing at all. We have no interest in proving or disproving any psychic phenomenon and any paranormal beliefs, any paranormal events. We don't want to disprove or prove. What we're interested in is trying to find out what meaning they give people in their lives and how they kind of relate to these events. And in the sociology religion, we'd call it like lived religion, how these lived experiences are enacted in everyday life. So that's one of the key kind of messages, is that we're not coming from a kind of hostile position of disproving, proving. Sociology is probably a good fit in that regard. Hopefully that answers your question there.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It was just something that I wanted to ask because it's, you know, I've, over the course of doing the podcast, I've interviewed a few people who either are working in academia or have, and it's interesting to talk to them about how that was for them and how they went about pursuing those interests in academia. Projects like this are really great, and hopefully it's allows for more of this sort of work to go ahead.
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, fingers crossed is that we can spark some discussion, and across disciplines as well, like not just sociology but other disciplines, and hopefully there will be more research into the paranormal, into these types of experiences and what they mean in people's lives.
Yeah. So once this phase of the Weekday Worldviews project is completed, once the time for people to submit the surveys has come to an end and you're looking at the results, do you think you would do it again, or do you think you might look at some of the results and some of the findings and do something different?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, good research, and hopefully this will be good research, is it should leave you with more questions than it does answers. So we're hoping that it will spark further debate. And we've already, we've been in touch with other people across the globe about things that are happening around there. And it turns out that there is some comparable instances, I think, of psychic phenomena, psychic events happening in Bulgaria, which we weren't aware of. So, potentially there could be different phases of this research funding permitted, you know, if we were to get another grant, that we could look at a different location, a different country, multiple countries, perhaps, and see how people across different cultures relate to the paranormal, psychic experience, psychic ability, and how that is lived out in their lives across different cultures.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I think I would find interesting, this is just a suggestion, but if you did the survey again, change the abominable snowman question, just change it to Bigfoot. I'd be really interested to see if that, how people answered that question and if there's any difference.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, wording of questions is really important. Super important. The thing with this scale is, and it's probably a weakness and a strength, is that we can't change it. We can't change the wording of this paranormal belief scale because it's been validated. We know that it's measuring the types of things we want it to measure, but we could completely revamp it, start again, and develop new questions. That would be very fun.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, Josh, this has been a really fun and interesting conversation. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. I've really enjoyed it. And just to say, if anybody's interested in the research, you can find our website. It's called weekdayworldviews.com. And if you would like to take part and be interviewed or fill out our survey, you can find out how to take part on that website. So thank you for having me, Rick.
Yeah, you're very welcome. This is usually the point at which I ask my guests to tell people how to find their work. So you've just done that for me. So thank you.
Oh, good. I was too eager with the plug there, you know, just to make sure. Yeah, well, we've been finding it hard to find people. So I'm just making sure that they know where to find us.
No, no, absolutely. So I'll put that information in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Josh. Listening back, I think my thing with traffic lights was more of an obsessive compulsion than a superstition. But perhaps those sorts of things are related. At the time this episode goes out, the Weekday Worldviews project is still active and open for participation. To be eligible to complete the survey, you have to be over 18 years of age, live in the UK, have attended a psychic night event in the last 18 months, and do not identify as a psychic or medium. There is a link to the Weekday Worldviews website in the show notes. Josh and the other members of the project team want to hear from you about who you are and why you chose to participate in this increasingly popular type of event. Your motivations, expectations, and takeaways. If you are eligible and enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to participate. It would be brilliant if you could also rate this episode and leave a short review wherever you listen, as it really helps to promote the podcast and grow an audience. Sharing it on social media, or even just telling a friend, is really helpful too. You can follow Some Other Sphere on X and Blue Sky, and subscribe on most of the well-known podcast platforms. You can also support the upkeep of the podcast with a donation via Ko-fi. Details on how to do that are in the show notes. If you'd like to email me here at SphereHQ, the address is someothersphere@gmail.com. It'd be lovely to hear from you with your thoughts about this episode or another that you've recently listened to, or suggestions for future guests and topics. Until next time, be safe and well, and I hope you'll join me again soon for another episode of Some Other Sphere.